Hello, hello everyone. Welcome back to another edition of the Palace Way podcast. I'm Alex, joining you on this international break, and for this very, very special episode is none other than our favourite friend of the pod, Bobby Manzi of The New Shopper. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. A bit tired from a very busy week following England up and down the country from Burton to Tottenham to Wembley. But no, it's been pretty good. Enjoyable international break and now back into club football.
Speaking of travelling, we thought it'd be a fairly quiet international break with the usual call-ups for various nations across the Palace board. But one person we didn't expect to be travelling abroad was Dougie Friedman. Bit of a shock news that really came at the start of that break, whereby all very suddenly he'd agreed a deal to go to Saudi Arabia. So Bobby, there's so much to talk about in terms of Dougie's legacy as a sporting director, but I think we just need to unpack the details of the move first. So just tell me a bit about what's happened here. Where is he going and why is he going?
Sure. So maybe some shock to fans, but behind the scenes, maybe there's always rumblings that people at the top of the club aren't getting along. It happens quite, I don't want to say quite regularly, but there are always spells where there are tensions at board level, and certainly Dougie is sometimes involved in them. Often different visions. Maybe Dougie wants to execute a youth target, but the board or the manager has got other pressing issues at that time and working with a tight budget constraint. And sometimes things like that can become quite tiring. I think there was an offer there from Saudi Arabia, Al Dira club. But my understanding is that it will be more of a role working for the Dira company across the different sports their PIF owned. Obviously increased salary, a bigger role, as I've already mentioned. I just think that potentially from Dougie's point of view, it was maybe the right time to move on and try something different.
Obviously, massive salary change notwithstanding. You know, we don't know the full details for sure on that, and I don't think it's fair on us to speculate, although I think we can imagine he's probably being paid quite a bit more than he's on now, and even then, I'd imagine quite a generous contract by Premier League standards. So, I mean, looking at the sporting role more directly here, it sounds like then he's going to have a much larger view in terms of the input he has over Saudi sporting operations.
Well, yeah, big project in Dira. It's where the Saudi royal family are from, the House of Saud. So obviously they want to make that area as prestigious as it possibly can be. And that sport's a big part of that. If you look at the Saudi vision, the Vision 2030, the whole Ridder season thing, it's they're really trying to push sports. Obviously, people have their own opinions on sports washing and points like that to that. But yeah, it's a huge role as long as everything goes through and he takes a job, because we're still awaiting an announcement on that. But things look like they're heading towards Dougie Friedman making it, heading towards Saudi Arabia. I just think the actual shock was how quick it kind of happened. It was reported and about 2 hours later it was announced. It felt very swift if you didn't have any inside ears. Even if you did have inside ears, of course there was the rumblings going on inside the clubs that people weren't getting along, but I didn't expect it to come this quickly. And normally when things aren't going quite right at the top of the club and there's a bit of tension, normally they manage to iron over it. So it did come as a bit of a shock. It's going to be a big job for Dougie out in Saudi Arabia. And yeah, obviously you wish him all the best. And now it's about Palace finding the right man to replace Dougie Friedman.
Yeah, let's have a look at that, because I think obviously there was a lot of mixed reaction from fans. I think everyone across the board was very sad to see him go, and a lot of acknowledgement of fantastic work that he's been doing over the last 7 years in SC25. And, you know, I think obviously he's going to be a very, very hard man to replace, notwithstanding that several major clubs that are looking to compete at the top level of English football have been in for him in the past, only for him to sign a new deal and remain. So just in that view, we obviously know a bit more about the structure at the club now through a combination of factors, really. But we know the likes of Ben Stevens and Ian Moody are now obviously quite senior anyway. Would you expect one of them to be taking the role, or do you think the club would be looking to perhaps recruit externally, or could there even be a change in the model of the sporting direction of the club?
I'll start with Ian Moody. He's someone I've alluded to on this podcast quite a few times in the past about there was a club figure flying a ball abroad to do negotiations or thrash out a deal without directly naming him. But obviously now all that's out there. My understanding is that Ian Moody has acted on the club's behalf in a lot of negotiations over the years. Dougie Freeman, obviously, great eye for talent and plays a big part in that. But Ian Moody has been playing an intermediary role on behalf of the club in negotiations with club, providing that level head with different football clubs and trying to get the best deal for the club. So he's been a big part of what's gone on at Palace in the last couple of years. As I mentioned on my tweet on the evening everything broke, that transfers like Daniel Munoz, Maxence Lacroix, Ebre Chiesa, Michael Olise, Ian Moody played big parts in all of these. And yes, Ben Stevens is another guy who assists Dougie Freeman at the club, assistant sporting director, so has a big say on things that go on. At the moment, it's kind of unclear who will take over and how that's going to work. My expectation is that Ian Moody will take on a bigger role, certainly for now. Whether that means he becomes sporting director or not, I don't know. It's too early to say. My feeling is he won't be, but that's not really based off a lot. It's just the sense I get. And yeah, it's going to be an interesting time. And in what already is a summer of transition for Palace, because if you look, that they could lose a couple of big players, maybe Ebre Chiesa, Mark Gay, Jean-Philippe Mateta, Adam Wharton, all expected to attract interest this summer. You've got a lot of players out of contract. You've got a Glasner negotiation for a new contract going on. The squad is already short from this season, so you're expecting a lot of transfer business now. And that period of transition has just become even bigger by leaving a Dougie Freeman-shaped hole at the top of the football club.
Definitely. Like I say, big boots to fill. Interesting to see who ends up filling it, but I think certainly in the interim, as you say, it will be a transitional period and there'll be definitely, a wide range of figures in the club that try to bridge the gap in the medium term. Obviously you mentioned there about Oliver Glasner's contract on a slightly different note. Obviously fantastic news. I think it's Fabrizio Romano that first broke the news, but where do you understand that conversation is, and have you heard anything new on that?
So, to use a football cliche, Palace are really keen to get Glasner signed on the dotted line. It's obviously he's important, very important for everything that Palace done. I think maybe he's the most irreplaceable piece of the jigsaw, if you like. They've now built a team based on Oliver Glasner's system. They want to build on that. The steady foundations are there. If you look at how they've done in cup competitions this year, if you look at how they've done in this middle part of the season in the league, it's been very successful. So the number one priority for the board is to get Oliver Glasner to sign a new contract. Conversations are happening, and Glasner wants assurances. He wants assurances that he will be able to continue to grow the squad, that he wants to set out a long-term vision for the club of how far he can take them. He's a world-class manager. I don't think anyone makes any secret of that. He's a top manager. He's won a European trophy, so he's going to want to see a position where he can grow the club. A press conference a few weeks ago, he was asked, about his position at the club and where he sees himself taking the club, and he said, "At this moment in time, I see a lot I can improve upon at the club. At the minute, there's nothing I can improve upon. That would be my time to go, but we've got a lot of work to do here." So that kind of gives you an idea to where his ambition is. I think the club are ambitious as well, and I think they want to try and match that ambition, and they want to tie Oliver Glasner down for as long as they possibly can. He's potentially, in terms of stature, one of the best managers the club has ever had. So yeah, it's going to be very important for Palace to get him to sign that deal, and fend off any interest from the likes of RB Leipzig or maybe even bigger clubs that could come in for him.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Leipzig because Jurgen Klopp, obviously taking up a more technical role there at the senior level of the Red Bull Group, there is someone that is said to be an admirer of him. But we've obviously seen interest in the past from the likes of particularly Bayern Munich, who made an approach for him that was rebuffed by Steve Parish famously. And then there's been more rumour mill based stuff about possibly Tottenham if they dispense Ange Postecoglou at the end of the season or something to that effect. Now, I'm not here to discuss the rumours, but what I am here to say is that there's obviously interest in someone of his pedigree, given the work that he's done in SE25 and. The scale of his ambition is obviously quite significant. For me, I mean, as much as he might angle for a pay rise, it's not really the sort of thing that I think will be at the forefront of his mind. I think that comes hand in hand with wider assurances over the project that he's been given to deal with. So really interested to see how that one goes. And as you say there, for me, I'm very much of the same opinion as you that he's the most irreplaceable figure in the current infrastructure at the moment.
There is a, you know, it's a school of thought that would say the manager is probably the most replaceable person at a football club, but I don't agree with that when it in terms of Oliver Glasner, because I'm not sure if he were to leave that you'd be able to replace him with a manager of the same pedigree.
No,
And
it depends. Yeah, go on.
I think the kind of way he's brought the best out of some of those players. So if you think maybe Will Hughes is a really good example of just molding the best Will Hughes possible, improving him as is Will Hughes 29, is he? 28, 29? And he's become a better player under Oliver Glasner. There are countless other examples of that. And I just think he's man management, he's tactical management is fundamental to any success Palace will have over the next couple of years.
So, given the scale of change, obviously retaining Oliver Glasner being one of the key strategic elements the board's going to have to deal with, let's look at the wider infrastructure at the club that was sitting under Zogi Friedman, because there's obviously so many different components in terms of the roles of the club. Obviously, beneath Zogi Friedman, you have the technical director in Ben Stevens, you have this wide scouting network. So, I'm not going to ask you to sort of rank it or scale it, but with Zogi gone, what are the foundations that are left behind, and do you think they're in a genuinely good place? I mean, there's talk of Dougie Friedman leaving a target list for Oliver Glasner and the backroom staff at the club. I mean, I don't know how true that really is, but how well do you think the club is going to be left from after his departure?
So I did a tweet a couple of hours after the news announced, a longer tweet over the normal limit, if you like, and said that the setup is there, the staff are in place, the strategy remains the same. It just needs a new chief to spearhead it. Dougie Freeman was very good at making players feel like the most important person on the planet, persuading those players that Crystal Palace is the destination for them, when really and truly they probably had better options in terms of pure stature of big clubs. So people like Mike Wolese and Adam Wharton joining Crystal Palace, these are world-class talents that in another time wouldn't have joined Palace, and Dougie Freeman's ability to persuade people to join the club played a big part in that. But I'm quite a firm believer that the club should be the selling point, not the person giving the sales pitch. If you're reliant on the person giving the sales pitch, then surely the club's not that good of a selling point. And Palace are a stable Premier League club. They're in a really good position. They've got a good manager. So someone else, another sporting director, will be able to persuade players that Palace is the destination for them. So while I think everything Dougie Freeman has done at the club was profound, his impact profound, and I don't think he is entirely irreplaceable. His ability to find good value in the market, working within tight budget constraints, got a great eye for talent. He was a smooth operator when it came to free transfers. The way Palace utilised the free market was quite astonishing. If you think Sam Johnson as a goalkeeper, or Will Hughes in midfield, countless other free transfers that were really successful. So yes, he's going to be a miss, but the structure is in place, the scouting system's in place, the data-led analysis. Maybe they could go a bit more heavy on it, but the systems are there. The product to succeed, if you like, is in place. It will just need someone else to lead it.
Would you argue it's as much a question of personality than experience when it comes to finding a replacement?
Yeah, I think it'll play a big part, because it depends what kind of sporting director you want to bring in. Are you looking for the negotiator? Well, you don't really need that because you've got Ian Moody. Are you looking for an eye for talent? Well, maybe you need that because Dougie Freeman had a great eye for talent. But also Ben Stevens, he's been a recruitment analyst in the past at other clubs. He's been like in a kind of scouty kind of capacity at Newcastle, I think it was. So he can do the talent ID, and there is a good scouting system in place. So maybe you just need that. The salesperson of the club and the ones that can deal with the player. Any conclusion you make at the moment can't be totally full, because I don't think the clubs are anywhere near making their mind up. Could they, employ a chief scout rather than a director of football and expand the scouting network? It's kind of unclear at the moment, but there's lots of options, and Palace need to find what is the best solution for them. But as I say, if Ian Moody takes over all of the negotiations, and then Ben Stevens maybe takes up the scouting, then obviously the profile you're looking for to replace Dougie Freeman is quite clear. If they want to go a different route, then maybe they'll want a more hands-on sporting director, director of football, whatever they choose to do.
So, just lastly, what's Dougie's legacy? Because I think we know the strength of the foundations that were in place and some of the great coups and occasionally the big flops in the past. But what's his overall legacy? How do you summarise what he's achieved at Crystal Palace?
Revolutionary, I think, is a really good word to sum it up. I don't think Palace's recruitment has ever been as good as this is. If you would have told any Palace fan maybe 10 years ago that they'd have four players in a European Championship England squad that got to a final, they would have laughed at you. If you would have told them they had two players get to a Copa America final, they would have laughed at you. You'd have told them you'd have a player in the Olympic final. They probably would have laughed at you. So the quality he has managed to pack into that squad, stabilise Palace in the Premier League as a club that can now go on and be ambitious and maybe try and shoot into the top, into the upper echelons of the Premier League. Yeah, I just think he's been revolutionary in what he's done at the football club. You know, Dean Henderson, Mark Gay, Maxence Lacroix. Okay, yes, it's a kind of Oliver Glasner romance signing, but Dougie still had to get it done. Jean-Philippe Mateta, Michael Olise, signing him for £7.5 million and selling him on for over 50. Yes, probably could have got more for Olise if the release clause wasn't there, but the fact is that Palace signed him on a ridiculously low release clause, and that come back to bite them in a sense because they had to have it in his Palace contract. But in actual fact, getting him to sign a new contract instead of having him leave to Chelsea and keep him at the football club for another year, that was a success. Eberechi Eze, Adam Wharton. I mean, Adam Wharton could go on to be one of the best midfielders in the Premier League, if not on the planet. I truly think he's a world-class talent. And if that talent is nurtured in the right way, then he could go on and do some massive things. You know, I can just carry on rattling through the squad. And now looking forward, Dougie Freeman's last signing at Crystal Palace Football Club was Romain Essay. So now is Romain Essay going to be able to live up to some of the things he's done? Hopefully. And then that can be a big part of Dougie Freeman's legacy as well. If Romain Essay goes on to become another Olise or Eze, even if you look at the signing of Ismaïla Sarr, he's someone that Dougie Freeman had courted for years. And since he's come into this football club, all right, he had a rocky start, but so did the rest of the team. But after 7 or 8 games, he started to carry the team upon his shoulders alongside Jean-Philippe Mateta and win them games of football. And it just shows how impressive his eye for talent is and what a great job he has done at the football club. Maybe Dougie has the ability to upset some people at the football club. Maybe people fell out at times at the football club. But the way Dougie, Steve Parish, Ben Stevens, Ian Moody, and the scouting department have built this squad, I mean, what a legacy to go down with. And as I say, everyone will wish Dougie the best of luck in the future. And now Palace move on. Palace look to go forward with the players that Dougie has worked to sign and the squad he's built at the football club. And now you look to progress and you look to build on that because the foundations are there. The club is steady. The club is stable. And now it's just about taking that next step. Dougie won't be there, but Oliver Glasner should be. Steve Parish will be. Ben Stevens will be. Ian Moody will be around. So I think the club are in a really good position, and that's probably the best thing you can say about Dougie Freeman is he has put the club in an excellent position to succeed.
I'm kind of anointing him on this pod as the great modernizer. That's how I see it. And like you say, revolutionary. I mean, I couldn't have put that better myself. I mean, you rattled off the achievements there and some of the notable players he's signed. But I think to spearhead, lead, and organize a department in the way that he has is a credit, not just to himself, but to the team beneath him and around him as well. You know, it's a very much a collective effort of which he has to take credit for the leadership and organization of it. I'm not going to pretend that Dougie did everything in that team, but I think certainly in terms of the principles that he ran that department, I mean, it might seem tedious and corporate, but these things really do matter in an organization behind the scenes. And I think to deliver the efficiency and the results that he has from essentially a club that had no real modern way of managing with a directing of football, a director of football, sorry, to then coming out with this incredibly solid foundation as an established and dynamic Premier League side is nothing short of phenomenal. I mean, regardless of whether it's Dougie or someone else, the players look at Crystal Palace as a place to develop. Are we a stepping stone? Okay, maybe, but we know our place in the food chain. We're not Real Madrid, but we're still bloody good. And I think for clubs to be able to then look at us and see us as a place whereby their young talent might go and develop on into world beaters is again attractive for negotiating, dealing with, and then ultimately selling on talent. It's a fantastic foundation to have, and I think, his legacy is always going to be one that is, incredibly renowned among Palace fans for many years to come. I don't see this as a particular Judas move. I think if it's the time to move on, so be it. If you offered me, say, 4 or 5 times my salary to do the same job in another country, I'd probably say yes too, I'm not saying that's the only reason he left either, but I think, I don't get people that are seeming to him as this kind of Judas figure because his legacy will always be above that ultimately. And that's the point I really wanted to stress there.
You mentioned stepping stone, and if you look at if use Brighton as an example, right? They have become a stepping stone in a sense, because if you look at players like Caicedo and Alexis McAllister, right? Let me do that again. So if you look at Brighton, they're a great example of a club who have reached new heights in the Premier League after their promotion from the Championship. Players like Moises Caicedo and Alexis McAllister, they've used the club as a stepping stone, but they've also been to Europe as a football club. And so using clubs, you players using clubs as stepping stones, as long as that improves you in the process, makes you money, because then you can invest in more talent and build a deeper squad. I mean, it's a great model, and it's been successful in normal clubs. I think maybe my one criticism of Dougie Friedman's time at the club is they didn't quite master the selling. If you think probably Joachim Andersson was the real sell, which was last summer to Fulham, making about £10 million profit on that, which is good, and obviously Sam Johnstone as well, signing for a free and then selling him. But it was only last summer the club really started to sell, and when you invest in talent, young talent, you do kind of have to say, all right, put our hands up now. We've had two or three really good years of this player. Now it's time to cash in, make that profit, and reinvest into the squad. For example, Mark Gay, yes, they end up selling Joachim Andersson instead. But if they would have accepted £70 million for Mark Gay in the summer, they would have made £55 million profit on him, and then they could have invested more into the rest of the squad. Yes, you might not have wanted to lose your captain. But now you're into a situation of where he's going into the final year of his contract this year, and you could end up losing him for less than what was offered last summer, because clubs know he's available on a free at the end of the season, and there's been no signs that Mark Gay he wants to extend his contract at Crystal Palace. So that's the only criticism you like of Dougie Freeman. But the whole model of buying young players, harnessing them, nurturing their talent, developing them, turning into great players you can sell on to the likes of Bayern Munich, as they did with Mark Willis, I just think it's been a phenomenal model. And
Yeah.
if you look at the most expensive transfers while Dougie Freeman has been at the football club, very few of them haven't lived up to expectation or done more than expectation. If you think Mateus Franta, Mamadou Sakho, but other than that, really nobody has really faltered since Dougie Freeman has spent big money at the football club, and what a job he did.
No, definitely, definitely. Look, we could talk about Dougie all night. I mean, whether it's as a player, manager, director of football, he never seems to really just stay out the Palace picture. So he's always been a bit of a club legend, and he's definitely not without his controversy too. But I think whatever his legacy is, it will be an enduring one. And I think for the majority of fans, I think we're broadly on the same page now that he's probably left for the last time in terms of involvement with Palace, although, never say never, right? Maybe he can buy the club one day with that Saudi money. Anyway, I digress. Bobby, thank you for your thoughts on Dougie. Obviously, it's a big topic of discussion, and we haven't really had the chance to cover it, but it's good to be having that chat with you now that it's kind of simmered down as we look ahead to Fulham. We've got that coming up at the weekend at the time we record this. And, I'm just hesitant to kind of move on from the whole Dougie thing because, I mean, as a club, we have to, as fans, we have to. And obviously, there's still so much to play for this season, and I feel like we're in for the most box office part, if you like. But there is one thing we need to talk about, and that's the international break. Let's be honest, I don't think listeners are too fussed about the broader picture. I think it's quite well documented as to how a lot of our players got on. But what I particularly want to talk about first is Abarreze's goal against Latvia to open his account for England, which was a particularly heartfelt moment for England fans. But obviously, I'm aware that you were there for both England games, obviously with Mark Guéhi and Abarreze both featuring in those games across various points. But what was it like? And just before we even look at England and what's going on with the first games under Thomas Tuchel, I mean, just give me your experience sort of as a behind the scenes look at what it's like to be a journalist at Wembley, because it must be a really fascinating experience.
Well, yeah, I actually went to both games as a fan, but I was in and around camp, well, pretty much all of that first week. And the Tuesday, we were up at St George's Park. Wednesday, I was off. Thursday, we were at Tottenham with the squad. Friday was obviously game day. Saturday was a rest day. And then Sunday, back at Tottenham again with the England squad. And Monday, game day again. And now we're here on Wednesday, getting ready for FA Cup action with Palace.
Well, the new
But yeah.
Craig David song sounds shit, doesn't
Yeah.
it?
But being in and around
Sorry, I had to.
being in and around camp, you do get a feel for things. They limit you to 15 minutes of watching a training session, but nonetheless, it gives you a good insight. And yeah, it was good fun. Thomas Tuchel's first real camp, seeing how things are changing, speaking to the players about different culture changes and training being at a higher tempo than it was under Gareth Southgate. So yeah, it was a really interesting week. I think maybe the best part of the week for me was seeing Crystal Palace have representation from England under 17s all the way to the senior squad. Every age group, Palace had at least one player in. Caleb Cupora, good success with the under 19s, qualifying for the under 19s Euros in Romania. England under 17s had success as well. Dean Benemar was in that squad. He didn't get any minutes, but they also qualified for their summer's European Championships. Adam Wharton played 90 minutes across two games with the 21s. So it was really good to see good Palace representation across the age groups and heading back to the seniors, being at Wembley. What a moment against Latvia for Eberechiese to score his first goal for England, the first time a Palace player has scored for the free line since the 70s. It was just a brilliant moment. I was ecstatic for him and Mark Gay as well, and the way they celebrated the goal together. And I know you said you wanted to avoid the bigger picture, but I do think it does show how far the club has come. I actually think his goal, Eze, was something maybe we've not seen enough from him this season, which was just his pure confidence to take players on. With his tricky footwork and just drive himself into the box and get a finish. But you know, it was a the long and short, sorry, the short answer. I've given you the long answer now, is it was a really good experience being around the England camp, and it was great to see the Palace boys succeed. It was disappointing that Mark Gay didn't start the first game, but it was good to see him back in the lineup for the second game, because ultimately I think he's England's best centre back and he probably should be starting every game for the Three Lions.
I certainly think the scope for him and Ezri Konsa to form a formidable partnership, isn't there? I
Yeah,
mean,
but I do think when John Stones is back fit, that probably John Stones and Mark Gay is probably England's best centre back pairing.
yeah, oh yeah, no, I'd agree with that opinion too. I'm just thinking more long
And
term,
I'm
but
a big Konsa fan.
yeah, no, definitely. Just before we wrap up, Bobby, then, I mean, obviously after the international break, we said on the last episode and probably the one before as well, just how season defining the run in is now. I think we did very well against the likes of Villa and Fulham to pick up 3 points in all of those games, and then obviously to get a scrappy win, but a necessary one against Ipswich. So we've basically maximised our points return leading into this break, and now we've got the likes of Southampton, Brighton, and all of those lot coming up. Massive, massive points to come, and then of course we start off with a massive quarter final in itself against Fulham. So, what are your thoughts on the run in coming up? How do you expect us to fare so far?
Well, I think that Fulham game is pretty season defining, to be honest with you. I think it's biggest game of the season so far. Obviously, an FA Cup semi final and potential final will top that. But you know, it's a game that will determine how we kind of look back on the 2024-25 season. Palace obviously went out of the EFL Cup in the quarter finals, so it's time to go one step further. Is sure a line that Oliver Glasner will echo in his press conference on Friday. But yeah, that game's just huge. A chance for a spot at Wembley in Oliver Glasner's first full season. The nerves, I'm sure, are high amongst Palace fans, but also the excitement of a potential day out in an FA Cup semi-final for the first time since Patrick Vieira. is one to get the juices flowing, to use another cliche. But I'm looking forward to it. It should be good. Mateta's back. With him up front, Palace can win any game of football.
Particularly face past Mateta. I mean, the threat of that, the aura, the Barclaysman vibes. I mean, it's going to be an all action display, hopefully, from the big man himself. Listen, Bobby, pleasure having you on. Looking forward to it. I am as nervous as anyone for that FA Cup game, for what it's worth. But I just have this confidence that's oozing through me that I think only Oliver Glasner is really the one to blame for. And I can only thank him for that. I think it's some of the best memories we're making as Palace fans. And long may it continue. I think we'll look back one day on these times and think, God, that was a good time, wasn't it? Anyway, Bobby, I must stop it there, but thank you very much for coming on and putting up with my little romanticism there at the end, but also for being, above all, a tremendous guest as always. Really, really good to hear your thoughts on all things England and all the sort of goings on at the club at the moment that we've had lately. Been a bit of an eventful break, but a very, very interesting one for sure. And looking forward to this last run of the season. Any final thoughts from you, mate?
Yeah, I would say I'm looking forward to the end of the season, but I think I'll be going out to Slovakia for the 21 Euros. So that would just be even busier than the season is with a game every 3 or 4 days. So I'm actually going to enjoy the slow burn for the rest of the season now. I think, is it just the two more midweek games there are left? Obviously Southampton after the FA Cup and then the Newcastle game. I think everything after that is Saturday, Monday, so just games, one game a week to look forward to now and get our teeth into. And the league season has the potential to be interesting, obviously, with maybe a slightly ambitious push for one of those last European places. I think Palace are 6 points off it with a game in hand. So yeah, it's going to be a very interesting time.
Right, we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much again, Bobby, for your time.
No,
Guys, if you
thank
haven't already,
you.
make sure you're checking us out on socials at The Palace Way. That's on X and Instagram. We're at The Palace Way Podcast on TikTok too. If you're not already doing so as well, Bobby, where can they find you on X slash Twitter?
It's just at Bobby Manzi on Twitter, and check the new shopper out. We'll have press conference pieces up on Friday, and total coverage of the FA Cup quarter final from Craven Cottage before heading to St Mary's on Wednesday for the Premier League trip to Southampton.
Lovely stuff, lovely stuff. Lastly, if you could leave us a review, it could be 1 star, 5 star, wherever you get your podcast, anything is good feedback for us. We really want to learn and improve from what you guys are saying. All that's left from me is to say safe travels for anyone making the short journey to the cottage on Saturday, and hopefully we'll get a massive result there. But if one thing's certain, you can find it all with us at the Palace Way. Thank you very much for your support, everyone. Have a lovely, lovely rest of your week, and up the Palace.